Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. I'm Father Matt Malone, Editor-in-Chief of America Magazine. I'm joined by Fathers Eric Sundrup and Sam Sawyer. And we had a really, really great piece by my predecessor and our brother Jesuit, Father Drew Christensen, who is now at Georgetown University, and was the 13th Editor-in-Chief of America. And he gave us a piece called Why the Vatican's Potential Deal with China is a Good Thing. And then in classic Drew Christensen style, laid out five or six different points that have really been helpful for bringing clarity to the conversation. And he joins us on the line now from Washington. Hello, Drew.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Sam.
It's great to have you with us.
Good to be with you. Nice to be back with you in America Radio.
Fantastic. So, Father Drew, if you for our listeners who may not know, first of all, what the situation is in China with the Church, if you could just, let us know in briefly, what is at issue here, and what is the position of the Church right now?
Well, the issue is the appointment of bishops. That's the first issue. The second is unity between the underground and above, the underground church and the above ground church, or the unregistered church and the registered church, within China, I think. So there really are two issues. In December, there was news that Archbishop Chaley, who for over a quarter century has carried the portfolio for China and the Vatican since he was subsecretary of state, was in Beijing to conclude negotiations on the appointment of bishops. And during that process, he called in a couple of underground bishops and asked them to make way for bishops who were originally associated with the patriotic, so-called patriotic church. One was well into his 80s, but it was really taken as a very strong initiative in the direction of creating some kind of working arrangements with the Chinese for the appointment of bishops. Now, it has to be understood that the Vatican and the Chinese government have been working together to appoint bishops for more than 20 years now. It's been on and off, mostly on, but occasionally it's been called off for a year or two because of one or another event on either Rome or in Beijing, when the Vatican canonized some martyrs of the Boxer Rebellion and so on. The Chinese got uppity and decided to break off the arrangements for appointments. And then when a bishop was ordained in Shanghai to take the place of both the registered bishop and the unregistered bishop, he immediately renounced his commitment to the Patriotic Association, was locked up for about 3 years by the Chinese authorities. And so things fell by the wayside again, but they've been appointing bishops again.
So just for our listeners who may not know, we basically have a situation where there are two churches in China. Is that correct? I know that there's a way in which that's right and wrong, right?
Well, the church itself insists there's one church in China. Right. John Paul II said, they were church with two faces, the underground and the above ground. But the Vatican's now been insisting, I think, since the time of Pope Benedict, that there's really one church in China. But there are those who were ordained with the approval of the Chinese and those without.
Right.
And those without are a part of what's called the underground church, the church the Catholics refuse to join a registered church within China.
So some of these ordained priests and consecrated bishops were recognized by the Chinese government and some were not, and that's really what's at issue here.
That's what's at issue here.
But, Drew, just to clarify for our readers, because we've covered this at other times, we actually, about a year ago, sent a team to China who did some extensive reporting on the situation of the church in China. And one of the things that I found very interesting about that is that it's pretty common, apparently, for people, actual Catholics in China, to worship, in some cases, both in the underground and the sort of official recognized church.
That's right. The situation on the ground is much more complex than the U.S. press generally, and the international press generally makes it out. There's a lot of cooperation, as I said in my piece. The seminarians go to the same seminaries, which were built by the government, generally, although they go outside the country occasionally. But they also priests, pastors of the two congregations, may live in the same rectory with the patriotic church worshiping in the church and the underground Christians worshiping the church hall. So there's a lot of cooperation that's been going on for a long, long time now. For a number of years, they've tried now to make joint appointments and appointing successors to both the underground, single successor to the underground and the registered bishop, so that the church community would be unified. So there's clearly an effort there on both part of the Catholic authorities in Rome and the communist officials in Beijing to see that there'd be just one church in China.
Mm-hmm. And what has Pope Francis done, and why is it controversial?
Well, I think it's what they've done is to ask some of these elderly underground bishops to resign and accept the appointment, a new appointment to take their place, who would, I guess, be jointly appointed by both sides, and thereby heal this rift. I think the controversy is kind of twofold. It's between a kind of conservative Catholics overseas who still hold on to a Cold War kind of view of things in China, and don't see that the Church has made agreements with Vietnam, with Cuba, and with the Church in Eastern Europe, where these kinds of divisions were overcome because it was dialogue, and they don't want dialogue. To deny dialogue is the kind of last resort in trying to show their opposition to the Chinese government. And that's part of what the issue is, I think, that there's a really political aspect. There's an expression of political dissent, not just loyalty to Rome, but political dissent from Beijing that goes on by expressing loyalty to Rome.
Drew, you said that a lot of that sort of argument is coming from overseas, not in China. What's the sense of, like, the faithful in China? How do they react to these types of appointments?
Well, I do think it's divided. I think especially among some older people, especially in the countryside, they probably don't understand all this. They don't understand the outside world. They don't understand what accommodations the church has made elsewhere, what the changes in church teaching in relation to church and state and all that kind of thing. Or the openings that John 23rd made to dialoguing with communists, which predates the origins of the underground church.
Yeah, right. That's a little before that.
Right. Yes, that's right. That's right. So there's a little bit of kind of their cultural isolation makes it difficult for them, and their poorer position within Chinese society, I think, as well makes it difficult. I think others, like Cardinal Zinn in Hong Kong, represent an outside group that holds on to that perception that what's distinctive is the loyalty to Rome in the face, in opposition to Beijing. And so the kind of pillar of their identity is kind of torn out by trying to accommodate with Beijing. But this has been an effort that's been going on now for many years. As I said, joint appointments are going on for more than 20 years since 2007, we've had an effort to stimulate unity inside the both wings, if you will, of the Catholic Church by Pope Benedict and now by Pope Francis. And the de facto coming together of the Church, where there's been a lot of this kind of interaction that Sam and yourself have been mentioning.
Yeah. American Catholics might ask, well, wait a minute, why is the government involved in this at all? And isn't it odd to have the government involved in the appointment of bishops? But first of all, not everybody has an American-style arrangement for their political system. But also, historically, governments have been involved.
That's right. Historically, governments have been involved. And it's still even some former city-states in Europe, where like Cologne, where the canons of the chapter may choose the bishop. That may have just ended in the last few years, but there were some of these holdovers until recently. According to Tom Rees in a recent column on Rich's News Service, there's still 10 countries in which who have a say of one kind or another in the appointment of bishops, and so the Vatican is engaged with them in that process. Mm-hmm. They'd have different structures, but there are places where the government still has a say in this.
Well, and let's also not forget that it wasn't too terribly long ago that the church thought that it had a say in who got appointed to, you know, be a king or run the country.
Right.
So
right.
There's a kind of reciprocity here.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the key issue here is whether the situation of Catholics and can be made better by this kind of arrangement. And it seems to me that Pelosi has thought that the unity of the church and the improvement of the conditions of religious liberty in China depend to some extent by being able to have this kind of relationship with the government, and ultimately to have a normalization, at least to the extent of having an apostolic nuncio in China, who would be able to report on the situation and intervene. One of the things I commented in my column was that we don't hear about all the divisions in the underground church and the turmoil internally in the underground church, the rivalries and so on. And one thing that Pope Benedict was trying to do with his letter of 2007, that was many years in the preparation, was to create the conditions of greater unity. But there was always the conviction we can't really fix this till we get our man on the ground. And so by having their being able to make the appointment of people that they trust as bishops, even if they also have people who are trusted by the Chinese, is one step in that direction. And the further direction would be the appointment of nuncio. I don't see that coming soon. I think with Xi Jinping getting absolute control over that country, which is hard to imagine a country of more than a billion people, but nonetheless, that they're going to ease up on the church. But certainly, that's one of the things that they've been talking about. I don't know about diplomatic relations, but that's kind of in the picture for how the church would be able to kind of improve the conditions for religious liberty.
Right.
Be able to have a nuncio on the ground.
Drew,
delegate on the ground.
We've talked a lot about sort of the moving diplomatic pieces and the official pieces in terms of recognition by, you know, the Vatican or recognition by the Chinese government. But one of the things that you also point out as a significant hope here and one of the great motivations for Pope Francis is the opportunity and the openness to have the church better enculturated in China. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to what that hope is and how that possibility is motivating Pope Francis and the Vatican to try to normalize these relations.
Well, that's a bit of a two-edged sword, but let me make a stab at it. The first part is that for centuries, and you can ask the Irish about this, the Latin Church has been trying to create unity in through the notion of kind of structural and even cultural uniformity within the church. So, and we had that in Vatican II when liturgy went into different languages, and then developing the bishops' conferences with different pastoral policies and so on. And then Francis has come on talking about the possibility of different kinds of disciplines in different areas of the world. But most what's important here is his understanding that the gospel takes different forms in different cultures. And I think for that reason, he's sympathetic to a demand that the Chinese have been making to sinicize religion, that is, to have religion with Chinese characteristics. And, you know, Francis being a Jesuit who has part of his tradition, Matteo Ricci and Valignano and the great Jesuit missionaries of the 16th and 17th century, it seems to me, has a sense that that's a possibility in China to show this forth. On the other hand, we know that part of what the government means by sanitizing.
Right. Not always what we mean.
Is acquiescence to hierarchical authority, and as they made clear even yesterday, absolute obedience to the Communist Party.
Right.
And that may not be so comfortable. I know in working with in some indirect discussions with Chinese, I was quizzed rather closely about Catholic social teaching, and so they're aware that there's a revolutionary potential in Catholicism, as there was with liberation theology in the 1970s, 80s, and early 90s in the Western Hemisphere, and then through Asia. So they're aware of that. On the other hand, I think that they prefer working with the kind of structural unity of the Catholic Church as opposed to the populist spread of evangelical Christianity in the house churches, where there is no control.
Yeah, different Protestant church on every block. And
yeah, exactly. Those Protestant churches may number 60,000 people.
Right.
besides the diocese.
Well, you could probably assuage some of their anxiety if you pointed out to them the number of conservative Americans who say Catholic social teaching is communism.
Well, you had in this comic kind of response to the situation with Bishop Sanchez Saranda saying that China was a paragon of Catholic social teaching. We all aghast.
Well, this may be, one of the great practical tests of the Jesuit maxim of, going in by their door and out by your own.
Right.
That's right.
As both the Vatican and the Chinese Communist government are attempting that maneuver from,
from different angles.
Different angles, but the same door.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
Drew, I'm intrigued. You mentioned real briefly the history there with Matteo Ricci and what was going on in enculturation. I think it would be really helpful for listeners to go a little more into that. And this controversy about how enculturation should work is not a new thing. There were discussions in the church about this when the missionaries there were there in the 16th and 17th centuries as well. And I'm also fascinated about this because my sister-in-law is from outside of Beijing, and she took me to see Matteo Ricci's grave.
Oh, you've been privileged to be there.
Wow. Which is in the middle of a communist college.
Well, it's the party school of the city of Beijing.
Yeah, see, know this much better than me. It was just an amazing experience for that. But I think a little bit of that history could be helpful, because my sister-in-law, who's basically not affiliated with any religion, knew all about Ricci.
Oh, yeah, well, Ricci still, and the Jesuits generally, are honored as, 17th century Jesuits, honored as the Westerners who really respected China. And the Chinese, and Xi among them, regard China as a civilizational state. And Ricci recognized was that they were a high culture, and they ought to be respected as a high culture. And so he learned their ways, and the Jesuits entered in by becoming part of their culture, and to the point that someone like Adam von Schall became the head of the Calendrical Institute, which was equivalent to being the prime minister at the time. Mm-hmm. So, they really became part of the culture, though they didn't convert the court. They were allowed, that made room for other people to go and proselytize among the people and so on. Verbiest, Belgian Jesuit, was the tutor to the Kangxi Emperor, and there's a very important relation. Kangxi Emperor became what the Chinese call a cultural Christian or a cultural Catholic. He wrote poetry about the life of Christ and so on, and he was involved in what was so-called Chinese rites
controversy.
Yeah, I guess is the word I was looking for, but. The Chinese rites controversy was a controversy over whether they could adapt certain rites that were common to Chinese, like veneration for ancestors and certain kind of Confucian practices that were considered part of the social order and so on, so forth. And the Kangxi Emperor wrote a letter to Rome defending the Jesuits' interpretation of Confucius as a philosopher rather than as a theologian, and then eventually traveled to Rome himself, as I recall the story, to make representations on behalf of the Jesuit interpretation of these rites as be, because they were not worshiping another god or another system of saints or anything of that sort. But they eventually suppressed by 1740 was the last date, but it begins in like 1709, 1723, I think, and then 17.
So it was not the Jesuit interpretation that won out in the end, Jesuits left China. Right,
but
right,
the Chinese
right.
still venerated them, and there were statues of Li Ma Du is the name that they call Ricci.
I was waiting for you to come up with it because I was not coming up with that.
I was also going to say, it was not the Jesuit interpretation that won out in that end.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, there might be another end coming.
Well, it may be coming out now.
Yeah, right.
But certainly you see it, I think you see it very much in Francis' understanding of the gospel taking a new shape in each culture. I mean, I think that's just in his apostolic exhortation, the joy of the gospel. I think that's a really central kind of tenet of his that I think we need to look at very closely.
Yeah.
And the Chinese, I think, can appreciate that. They also appreciate that he's in that tradition and therefore respects their culture, and that may make a difference in being able to get into China. But on the other hand, there is this tremendous need on the part of the Communist Party under Xi for absolute control, and so it's hard to imagine that while they're loosening up on everyone else, they're going to open up just a little bit for Catholics.
Yeah, and when we're talking about China, there's always another hand on the other hand.
Right,
right. Right, exactly. So the piece is called Why the Vatican's Potential Deal with China is a Good Thing. It's by Father Drew Christensen, who is a distinguished professor at Georgetown University and the 13th Editor-in-Chief of America. Father Drew, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Good to be chatting with you all.
All right. Anytime.
Hello to my fellows there.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
All right. Take care, Drew.
Bye now.
You know, I was actually an associate editor working under Father Christensen when the letter came out in 2007 from Pope Benedict about the church in China. And I remember Father Drew bringing it to my office at American saying, "This is important." Okay. So now we know why. But that was one step in a journey of 1,000 miles, right? But it also makes you wonder,
so
like,
about
what
it 10
would
years
have happened.
Later, that's prompt for the
right.
church.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this matches up. In the earlier part of the radio show, we were talking about styles of evangelization,
right.
And that it ties right into what's going on in the ways of going about evangelization that are being pursued, and the tensions, the very real tensions that these create, and very real consequences they have with governments and everything else that's going on.
It makes you wonder, though, what would have happened if we had stayed in China.
I think it would be a very different...
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's prideful on our part.
We'd be different.
I don't know.
I imagine
Jesuits
we would
aren't
be
known
quite
for pride. So.
Really? Oh, I hadn't heard that.
We're the most humble order in the entire world.
That's exactly right. No, but it does make you wonder, you know, what would have happened. And Father Drew made mention of the evangelical Protestant churches that are making headway in China. And, you know, a lot of that has to do, the speed and impact of that movement has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, they're not an international church with a hierarchy and a
right.
priesthood. So we're... Well,
They're harder to control too. Like if you're used to a hierarchy system where
right.
you find the person to speak to about what's happening, that's going to be a
right.
that system that they're running is going to really make the government concerned.
And very soon, you know, China will be the largest Christian country on earth. Right?
Right,
it will have more Christians mm-hmm. than any other country,
despite being a distinct minority among the Chinese
despite
population.
Despite being
itself.
A distinct minority, exactly, and all the more reason then why this question has to be figured out. So you've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You can find links to all of the stories that we've been talking about today at americamagazine.org/Sirius, where you can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. I'd like to thank Father Eric Sundrup and Father Sam Sawyer for joining us here on this very snowy day. We promise it won't be an all Jesuit broadcast every week, but it's kind of fun to do every now and then, particularly when the weather outside is frightful. And to subscribe to America, you can call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.